always enjoy coming to Creekwood. I get to spend a lot of time with Eric, and y'all have an excellent youth minister here. Eric, I've been around a lot of youth ministers, and Eric is one of the best. He does a great job, and I think y'all are really lucky to have him here. He does a really good job. So Batman, by the way, I was making the point to the kids how silly it would be if we let other people our age make big decisions for us, and how oftentimes we do that anyways, but we're not going to name our kid Batman as much as I would like to. I mean, how cool would that be, though? Seriously, right? Be like, what's your name? And be like, I'm Batman. I just think that would be neat. I'm getting off on a tangent here already, but I really wanted my son's middle name to be Danger, okay? Because think how cool it would be, like, I mean, how often do you use your middle name anyways? How cool would it be they'd be like, you know, this is a tricky situation, we got a problem, he'd be like, guys, it's okay, Danger's my middle name. And I just thought that would be so much fun to have, but that got nixed. We didn't do that, and probably rightly so. So earlier today, I was coming home, and I hadn't told Ethan we'd be coming tonight. My son is six, and I get home, and I said, Ethan, we're going to go to VBS tonight. And he was like, we're going to VBS. And he was so excited, so pumped up about that. He started running around the house, really excited to be here. And so I know he's having a good time like all the other kids are having a good time. And I was just watching him get excited about it. And I was thinking, man, how great is that? That kids get excited about something like coming to church and singing fun songs that have to do with God and spiritual things. And they go to classes and they learn all these neat things. Kids are great like that, right? Kids get excited about the little things. There's wonder there still with kids, right? And I love the theme for this week with wonder. I love that idea of wonder. And I think kids do a great job with this idea of wonder. Last week, we were going to have a Devo at church. And at the end of the Devo, we were going to have s'mores. And so I was talking to somebody about this, and we were talking about how the s'mores would work. And Ethan must have overheard us. And so on the way home, he was like, Dad, we're going to have s'mores. I'm like, yeah, we're going to have s'mores. And so the next morning, we were still in school at the time. He got up and was getting ready for school. He was like, we're going to have s'mores this week. I was like, yeah, we're going to have s'mores. And then a couple nights later, he reminded me, we're going to have s'mores. And just so excited about it. Finally, Sunday comes, and he's like, we're going to have s'mores today. We are. And then we're on our way to church that night. And he goes, Dad, what is a s'more? And I just thought, like, here he is. He's excited about something, and he doesn't know what it is, right? Kids are that way. They get worked up. They get excited about little things like chocolate cookies, or they get excited about coming to vacation Bible school, being around their friends and learning about God. Their sense of wonder is so great. Kids are good at that. It comes natural to them, the idea of wonder. Things are special to them. They don't have any problem using their imagination or thinking about the big things that are going on. They can make the smallest thing into this huge, wonderful, awesome thing to get excited about. And then something happens, I guess, and we get a little bit older, and we lose a little bit of that sense of wonder. Maybe we've seen too many sunrises and sunsets. Maybe we've seen too many nights where the stars are shining above us. And so we lose that sense of wonder. And so I like this theme because I think it's important to go back and to consider God's wonders. In fact, we did this retreat a few years ago with my church in Memphis with some of the teens, and we called it the Wonderfall Retreat. Wonderfall. If you say it really fast, it sounds like wonderful, but wonder was our theme. And we looked at one short little verse, was kind of our springboard in the book of Job. And you don't have to turn there, but if you like, you can. If you underline your Bibles and you just want to underline a verse, it's kind of a neat one to underline. It's in Job chapter 37, verse 14. And the verse there, you know, I won't get into the book of Job, and we could spend a long time talking about it. But basically, Job's got all of his friends telling him, giving him bad advice. He's trying to figure out, he's trying to reconcile why these bad things are happening to him. At that time especially, people thought, they had this retribution principle. Good things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. Well, here bad things, terrible things were happening to Job. And Job was like, I'm good, I'm a good person. And his friends were like, well, you must have done something wrong. And he's like, no, I didn't. And so then this guy, Elihu, comes to him. And he doesn't really give him great advice either. But I like this one verse because I think this one verse is an important one to Job, and one that kind of God makes Job do later. In chapter 37, verse 14 of Job, it basically just says, stop and consider God's wonders. Stop and consider God's wonders. I think that's an important thing for us to do with how busy we are, and I don't have to spend very long talking about how busy we are or how distracting things can be. I think it's important that we take time to stop and to consider God's wonders. And by wonders, it could be a lot of things. Maybe it's the way that God has worked in your life. Maybe it's the forgiveness you've experienced in knowing His Son. Maybe it's just nature. Maybe it's the things around you. Maybe it's seeing how powerful and awesome God is, how big He is in comparison to everything else that's going on around us. And when we do that, when we stop and consider God's wonders, I think it puts things in perspective. I think that's what Elihu was trying to get Job to do, to kind of get perspective on things. And for us, that's important as well. With how busy we can get, we can lose perspective so easily. We can get so distracted that we forget that we need to stop and consider God's wonders. And so tonight, as we look at these passages in Exodus, we are going to come to those. I want us to just stop and consider God's wonders. Because I think if the people that are in this story, or it would be like Exodus 14, 15, 16, 17, I think if the people in the story, if they did that, they wouldn't have had as much to complain about. They wouldn't have gotten themselves into some trouble then and definitely later. And so if you would, go ahead and flip over there to Exodus 14, 15, 16, 17. While you're flipping there, let me tell you another quick story. So when I was in college, we did this program where you'd pair up with another college student and you'd get like this little brother or little sister from the community. I went to school in Harding and Searcy, and so there'd be a lot of kids in the community that'd be a part of this. And so me and my friend Ben, we had this little kid, and to be honest, I don't really remember his name. We didn't do it that long. But I do remember some of the times that we had together. I remember going to his house and playing some video games. I remember this other time they had this Easter event at the church where they had like an egg hunt. And we were supposed to make these tie-dye eggs. And they decided that the way we were going to make it, one of the options is you took this tie. Like, you were supposed to bring a tie. So we brought a tie. And, like, we literally put the egg wrapped up in the tie. And you put a rubber band around it. And you put it in the boiling water. And then when it comes out, they showed us this example. It had, like, this really cool pattern of what was on the tie. And so we're like, this is fun. So we had, like, this fancy tie had all these colors on it. We did it. We thought we did it right. And then time comes to pull it out, and we pull ours out of the water. And we weren't the only ones that had this problem. We unwrapped the tie, and do you know what we saw? Just a white egg. And we were like really disappointed. We thought we were failures as big brothers here. And the little boy that was with us was like, oh, it's a white one. And so to him, this kid, like, yeah, that is a white egg is a pretty amazing thing, right? We kind of were hoping for something different, but I like the fact that he still was amazed that, hey, this is a white egg, and there is some wonder involved in that as well. So some stuff is going to happen in Exodus 14, 15, 16, 17. We might look into 19 a little bit too. We're not going to do a lot of reading, but we're going to skip around some. Some stuff happens that's amazing, that should have made the people of God stop and think, wow, our God is amazing and wonderful and powerful. But they sometimes have a different response, as we'll see. So, Exodus chapter 14. And right around this time is where they cross the Red Sea. And do you remember what happens right before they cross the Red Sea? People of God were kind of in a difficult situation. They had been for a long time. They had been slaves. They were in bondage, in slavery to the Egyptians. And so God used Moses and Aaron, and they freed the people of God. And so they go, and then if you'll remember, you know, Pharaoh kind of changes his mind. He chases after them, and they get to the Red Sea, and it looks like they're stuck. And then God does this amazing thing where He parts the sea, and the people of God walk across it. Like, that alone, like, my mind, with all the movies and things that we have, like, you'd think it would be easy to visualize that, but I still, like, have trouble grasping what that must have looked like. And you would imagine if you were there and you saw the parting of the sea, like, that would stick with you forever. That would be one of those memories that you'd have of, man, how awesome God is. Like, He parted the sea. He freed us. Like, we were captives. We were slaves. They were working us so hard. They were working us to death. And God freed us, and He made this miracle happen. And so the people of God, they cross the sea, and they're, of course, glad that this happened. They're grateful to God. They praise God for this. We get this really neat song that takes place in Exodus chapter 15. And right before that, look in Exodus 14, right before they have this really neat song, and we'll read a couple verses there. Exodus 14, verse 31. Listen to what it says. It says, "And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant." Listen again. "And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed," they saw it. They were witnesses to it. They saw what God had done for them, how He had freed them, how He had rescued them. They saw the miracle that took place of the sea parting. Like, I mean, I can't even imagine. It says, "When they saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord," and it says, "they put their trust in Him and in Moses, His servant." So they saw it. They experienced God's provisions. They had this great experience of God. And then because of that, they had faith in God. They trusted in God. They believed in God. They feared God. And so they wanted to follow God and also follow His servant Moses. And then right after that, in chapter 15, we won't read the whole thing, but listen to some of the things they say. Verse 1, it says, "Then Moses and the Israelites sang this song to the Lord. 'I will sing to the Lord, for He is highly exalted. The horse and its rider He has hurled into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. He is my God. I will praise Him, my father's God, and I will exalt Him. The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is His name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army He has hurled into the sea. The best of Pharaoh's officers are drowned in the Red Sea. The deep waters have covered them. They sank to the depths like a stone.'" Listen to verse 6. "'Your right hand, O Lord, was majestic in power. Your right hand, O Lord, shattered the enemy. In the greatness of Your majesty, You threw down those who oppressed You. You unleashed Your burning anger. It consumed them like stubble. By the blast of Your nostrils, the waters piled up. The surging waters stood firm like a wall. The deep waters congealed in the heart of the sea.'" Go down to verse 11. "'Who among the gods is like You, O Lord? Who is like You, majestic in holiness, awesome in glory, working wonders? You stretched out Your right hand and the earth swallowed them.'" Verse 13. "'In Your unfailing love, You will lead the people You have redeemed. In Your strength, You will guide them to Your holy dwelling. The nations will hear and tremble. Anguish will grip the people of Philistia. The chiefs of Edom will be terrified. The leaders of Moab will be seized with trembling.'" And he goes on and on. And so they witnessed it, and their reaction, their natural reaction, is to praise God for what He had done. God had rescued them. They had experienced it. They believed in Him. And they praised Him. Okay, do we see the progression? God had rescued them. They'd experienced that. They believed in Him. And they praised Him for it. And we've probably had times like this where we experience the wonder of God. Maybe some of those times that really come to our mind happened when we were a teenager. I've witnessed some wonderful things in teenagers' lives. I've seen God work wonderful ways in the lives of teens. So that might be a time that comes to your mind. Maybe you've experienced it in some other way. Maybe you've experienced it by seeing God's wonders in your own kids or in some other aspect of your own life. We've seen those times. And when we see those times, when we experience the wonder of God, when we see the way that He's working in our lives and in the lives of people that we care about and love, I think our natural response is to believe in Him and to praise Him. We experience it, we believe, we praise Him. And then we get to what happens just a little bit after. So we get this song of praise, and then this great experience of God, this act of faith, is followed by doubt, by disobedience. And I would imagine that's something we've also experienced before. And so they had this recent success, and then they come, some time has passed, when we get to verse 22. And look at verse 22. I find this interesting, how much time has passed. It says, "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water." So in 3 days, since they were just singing praises about how awesome and mighty, and there's no other God like you, God. You're the best God ever. We love you, God. We want to sing your praises forever. What other God can do the wonders that you can do? And then they have 3 days where they're in the desert, and things are rough. And that causes them to doubt. That causes them to disobey God. Listen to what they say in verse 23. It says, "When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter." That is why the place is called Marah. "So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, 'What are we to drink?' Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood from a tree. He threw it into the water, and the water became sweet." Okay, little tangent here. Something about this part of the story that I think is really cool, really neat. So they finally, like they've been traveling for 3 days. They're thirsty, right? And they finally get to the water, and they get there, and the water is bitter. It's undrinkable. And so the people of God do what the people of God always do. They complain, and they grumble. And then Moses does what Moses always does. He cries out to God. And then, the important thing, God does what God always does. And he saves them. He saves the day. And in verse 25, he gives them this piece of a tree to throw into the water. And to me, like, there's some imagery here of God's grace. Okay? I think, and maybe I'm stretching this a little bit, I hope not. I think that in a similar way, the cross of Christ, the tree that Christ hung on the cross on, turns our bitterest moments into blessings. Just like in this story here, this piece of a tree turns this bitter water into something sweet. I think similarly, the tree, the cross, also turns our bitter moments into moments of blessings, into these sweet moments. The cross of Jesus, I think, is like a tree thrown into this toxic pool that transforms the waters of our lives into sweet blessings. And here they get, I think, something that they don't deserve. Let me tell a quick story, all right? Some of y'all look like you might be zoning out. It's okay. It's late. I know. You've had a long day. I think it can be great when you get something that you don't deserve. It can be great when you don't get something that you should get, that you deserve. So, a little story about my wife and I. We went to school together at Harding. We met there. She's from here, I'm from Memphis, but we ended up both at Harding. Our relationship kind of has 3 years to it, okay? First year we were friends, the second year we were dating, the third year we were engaged, and then we were married. And so we had our first date at this place outside of Searcy called Gillum Farms. It's a really pretty place. It's got water and this gazebo, and it's lit up at night. It's awesome. So we had our first date there. And then we kind of gotten to the point of our relationship where we were talking about marriage. And I knew she had mentioned the idea of maybe getting married at the same place. So when I was thinking about proposing, I thought, hey, it would be cool to propose there too. And then our first date and our proposal and our marriage all happened at the same place. So I called up the place. I got it all set up for us to come out there. And I had the day all planned out. I'd bought the ring. I had written her a song on the guitar that I was going to play for. And it was going to be a special night where she would hopefully say yes at the end of it. And so the day comes for me to go and to make this happen. And I get a phone call early that afternoon. And it's the people from the place. And they say, listen, there's a problem. Our power is out. And so we can't light it up at night. And so if you're going to come, you got to come now, because when it's dark out there, it is dark. And we both agreed it's important to see the person you're proposing to. We feel like that's an important part of it. And so I'm like, all right, let's do this thing. And so I go out, I'm going to get in my car, And this reference might not mean much to you. I still drive, but back then I drive a Ford Explorer. I named her in college. I named her Dora, Dora the Explorer. And so I go and I get in Dora, and I call up my wife who's at a dorm across campus, and I go and I pick her up, and I have her get in the car, and I have her put a blindfold on. I will say I don't typically have her put blindfolds on when I get in cars, but I have her put a blindfold on. She didn't find it too strange, and she did it willingly. And we started driving to this place, Gillen Farms, for the proposal. I'm already so nervous, right? And this is before, I know we can all remember this time, right? Teens, when I've told this story, they're like, I don't get it. This is before, like, GPS time or GPS on the phone. I didn't have one on my phone. So I just had, like, directions written on a little note card in ink. And I don't know if my hand had smudged the ink or what, but I could not follow my directions. The sun is starting to go down. All right, I'm nervous. It's going to be dark soon. My whole plan's going to be ruined. In the time we'd gone to this place before, I wasn't driving, and when I'm not driving, I don't pay attention. And so I have no idea where I'm going. I'm kind of panicking a little bit. And I guess I might have been driving a little bit too fast, trying to find this place. I might have been, you know, looking down, looking up at the directions, maybe swerving a little bit. And so all of a sudden, I look up in my rearview mirror and I see flashing blue lights. And I'm thinking, I'm getting pulled over on proposal day. I cannot believe it. The second thing, though, I think is, oh no, is it illegal to have somebody blindfolded in your car? I have no idea. This is going to look bad. And so I say, Crystal, take off your blindfold. We're getting pulled over. And she kind of laughs. I'm like, no, really, take off your blindfold. We're getting pulled over. And so she takes it off. We pull over. And then two of the most, like, intimidating, muscular police officers get out of their car. I mean, these women just looked so intimidating. I'm just kidding. It's two men. And so these two men come up to my car. And, like, apparently I looked very threatening, and they needed to do something because it took both of them coming out. One comes up on each side. Come to find out, they think I've been drinking because I'm swerving so much. And then they just realize something else is going on. And I tell them I'm lost, and they say, well, where are you trying to go? And I say, I can't tell you. And they're like, okay, well. And then it comes to this time. Tell all this to tell this part. They say, listen, I'll tell you what, we are not going to give you a ticket tonight. And they left, and they led us on our way, and I said, Crystal, here's where we're going, and she helped me get there, which is kind of life, really, saying, this is where we need to go, and she helps me get to this place. But we get to the place, we do the proposal, light's still out, she says, yes, we're married, we're here in Mobile right now. And so one of the things I think about always when I think about that story is, did I deserve to get a ticket? Yes, okay. Was I speeding? Yes, I was speeding, very much so. Was I driving recklessly? I was. I absolutely could have been given a ticket for a hefty fine, and, like, no one would have thought anything of it. But what was really neat about that night, and what I think about, and I'm sure you've experienced something like this before, was the feeling of not getting what you deserve. It can be a great feeling to not get what you deserve. And the same is true in this story here, the people of God. They did not deserve freedom. They did not deserve God providing for them this sweet-tasting water. They don't deserve what they're going to get in the next chapter here, which is this food from heaven. They don't deserve these things. But God gives them this grace. He gives them what they do not deserve. And God does the same thing for us. He constantly is providing for us in a way that we don't deserve. We are sinful, wicked people. We are people that have turned our back on God and done things that we should not have done. We don't deserve forgiveness. We don't deserve grace. But yet we have a God in heaven who is willing to provide that for us. And I think that's one of God's wonders we need to stop and consider. We need to stop daily and reflect on how wonderful it is that we have a God in heaven, the same God that the people of God are praising in chapter 15, who's this God above all other gods, and he's the one that chooses to not give us the very thing that we deserve, which is death. It's not a speeding ticket. It's not something we can pay off on our own. That's where the analogy kind of goes off. We deserve death. He doesn't give that to us. The people of God here, many times, I think God just wants to strike them down. And they deserve that, right? By the way they treat God, God had given them so much. He had provided for them. They had witnessed it. They had seen his wonders. They had seen the way the Red Sea had parted. They did not deserve what God was giving them. But it's great when you don't get what you deserve. And so we get this image of this, this piece of wood that turns this bitter water into something sweet. And we experience that still today with the image of the wood of the cross, of Jesus dying on the cross, his resurrection, and that turning something so bitter, like what we deserve, into something very sweet. So we get into chapter 16, and it's about a month later, and the people again are grumbling to God. Look at verse 1. It says, the whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they'd come out of Egypt. Verse 2. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Listen to what they say. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Now, a couple things I find interesting about this. First of all, I don't think it's true that they were just standing around pots of meat and food and just eating to their heart's content all day long. I'm confident that wasn't the case when they were in slavery in Egypt. Second thing is, haven't they seen how God has provided for them? This has been a month, and yet they have forgotten again. These Israelites, this people of God, they keep forgetting about the ways that God has blessed them, the things that God has done for them. What they need is perspective. What they need is to remember. We go to chapter 17. And we see in chapter 17, look in verse 1. Earlier it was food, and in that whole section in chapter 16, they get manna from heaven. They get the sweet bread. They get quail, right? And we get a little bit of discussion on how they collected that and the Sabbath and things like that. And we see this miracle. They witness a miracle of God providing for them. He's provided for them by releasing them from bondage. He's provided for them by letting them cross the Red Sea. He's provided for them by giving them water to drink and now food to eat in this miraculous way, this unnatural way. And then chapter 17 again, listen to what happens. Surprise, surprise. It says, the whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, give us water to drink. Moses replied, why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? Listen to verse 3. But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, again, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? They're getting more dramatic, the people of God. Now it's not just them, but it's their children and their livestock that God is not providing for. And so they have this mindset that God has just brought us here to die. How far we have come, right? Here we are in chapter 17, verse 3, and they say, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst? If you go back a couple chapters earlier, not that much time, a little over a month, chapter 14, verse 31, it says, and when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. What has happened? They had trusted in God. They had seen the way he provided for him. They feared the Lord. Now it doesn't seem like they fear the Lord at all. Now it seems like they don't trust the Lord at all. They're upset with Moses. They're upset with God. They wish they never even came here. You would think that they would have learned from their mistakes. You would think that they had to have better perspective than this. But no, it seems that they don't. And I think that we read this and it's easy to wonder how they could have acted this way. But if we think about it, I think we can put ourselves in the sandals of the Israelites more often than we would like. Where we have seen the way that God has provided, we've believed in him, we've praised him, and then it isn't days later, much time at all, maybe a month, a few weeks, where we had this time where we were praising God and trusting him, and then we get to this point where we're grumbling against him, where we've lost our trust in him, where we're complaining, where we feel like it would be better off if I was dead than in this situation. Let me tell another story. We got some time. So, I hope y'all appreciate this. Most of my stories are for teenagers, and so I don't know how they go over well with adults, and so just bear with me. All right, so when I lived in Memphis, my wife does not like this story, by the way. Disclaimer, she did not approve of this. When I lived in Memphis, my parents lived just down the road. It was just a few miles away. And so my mom has like really bad arthritis, and my dad travels a lot for work, so oftentimes they'd have me come over to the house to help with some things. And so, I was the only son living in town, and trying to be a good son, I'd go over there and help them with some things around the house. And so this one time, my mom calls me over to the house, and she needs me to change a light bulb that's up in the shower. So I'm like, sure, Mom, I'll come do that. And I come over to the house, and I get into their bathroom, and their shower is one of those just kind of open standing showers. And the light's up really high, and it's higher than I thought. So I bring in a stool, and I get up on this stool to change this light bulb. And the light fixture is kind of weird. It's this light fixture where it's got three screws, and I could do one of two things. I could take out all the screws, pull the light fixture down, change the light bulb, put it back up. Or I could just take out one screw, and it kind of bends enough where I can reach my hand up there, take a light bulb out, put the new one in. So I go for that option, just one screw. And I take it out, and I change the light bulb. Guess what happens? There's light. And the light comes through the light fixture. But I realize it's like really dirty and filthy. And so trying to, earn some points and be a good son and do what good sons try to do, I thought, well, I'm gonna go the extra mile here. I'm going to clean this light fixture. So I go and I grab the ultimate cleaning tool, a Clorox wet wipe. And I go and I grab this wet wipe, and I start cleaning out this light fixture, and it's really dirty. And I get to this like huge clump of dirt, or at least what I thought was a huge clump of dirt. And I start wiping and wiping, and I can't get this huge clump of dirt to move. And I put a lot of muscle into it, and finally I dislodge this huge clump of dirt, or at least what I thought was a huge clump of dirt. And so I'm wiping out this huge clump of dirt, or at least what I thought was a huge clump of dirt, and I wipe it all the way out, and it falls out of the light fixture. And I don't know if you're like me, like where you've had times where things kind of go in slow motion for a second. Maybe not. Has this ever happened? Okay, maybe it's just me. This was one of those times. This huge clump of dirt, or at least what I thought was a huge clump of dirt, was falling in midair, and I realized that this huge clump of dirt wasn't a huge clump of dirt at all. It was actually a dead mouse. And this dead mouse is flying through the air, but I realize it too late, and it falls, and it hits me right on the cheek. Pretty sure it touched my eyeball, and got dead mouse on my eyeball. And so anyways, it hits my cheek, and it falls off. David's like, what did I do having this guy come? He's telling a dead mouse story. Anyways, so it hits my face, and it falls off on the floor. And let's just keep this between us, okay? Because I might have let out a very girlish scream. So let's just keep that in here with us. And then I go and I grab another Clorox wet wipe, and I wipe my face and eyeball to clean it up. And then I go and I grab a Target bag, and I put the dead mouse in the Target bag, and I take it outside. And I'm done, all right? I'm out of here. I don't even think I said anything to my mom. I think I just left out of embarrassment. And so anyways, a few months later, probably about 8 to 9 months later, we need to get better light bulbs, okay? Because my mom calls me, and the light bulb is out again. Here's my question, all right? Let's say I go, and I go back to change this light bulb in my parents' shower. What would I be thinking about when I go to change this light bulb? Anybody? What would I be thinking about? You don't want to say it, but you're all thinking about it. You'd be thinking about dead mouse. Okay, is there going to be a dead mouse up there, right? And so would I do things differently? Yes, right? I might wear goggles this time, okay? I would probably undo all the screws and take the whole light fixture down and do it at a distance where my face is not in danger of something falling on it. I would do a lot of things differently, right? Here's the thing. It would not make any sense for me to approach that same situation the same exact way, right? We can understand that. But how often do we do that with other situations in life where let's say we get into a situation where we sin and we mess up? And then we learn from that. We think, I'm not going to do that again. But then we do it anyways. We don't make the changes necessary that we need to make. Or in a situation like this, the people of God, they should have known that, hey, this is the way that things are going to be. God is going to take care of us and provide for us. And they got in trouble maybe for grumbling and for not listening. You would think they would eventually learn, right? You think they would change their approach. But we, for whatever reason, we don't do that. We don't have enough perspective to say, hey, I'm going to do things differently this time. And I wonder if the people of God did that. I wonder if they thought about and realized that God is going to provide for me. He is going to take care of me. Yeah, I'm going through a couple days of being in the desert. I'm going through a couple days where I'm really thirsty or I'm really hungry. Things are not going well. But I know that the last time I was in this situation, God provided for me and he took care of me. And I wonder if we could do that too. I wonder if we could be in a situation where we go through a storm, we go through a time where we're in the desert, we're wandering through the wilderness, and we're going through this time where we don't see how God is working. But maybe we can know that he's working. Maybe we can know because we can look back at other times where we've seen the way that he's worked in our lives and know that he is with us. And we approach the situation differently. Maybe we don't lose faith this time. Maybe we don't complain as much this time. Maybe we realize this is an opportunity this time to do something great for God and to show that, God, I will be faithful through this time in the desert. I will be faithful during this difficult situation. If we go a couple chapters over, chapter 19, and this is right before chapter 20, and what happens in chapter 20? Ten Commandments, right? So they get to Mount Sinai. The Ten Commandments are about to happen. We're about to have this huge moment in the history of our faith, right, for God's people. And listen to what happens in chapter 19, this conversation that Moses and God have. This is kind of where I want us to start wrapping up. Verse 3, chapter 19, says, "Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, 'This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob, and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves,'" listen to verse 4, listen to this, "'you yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself.'" So he starts off and he says, "Moses, I want to make this clear. Here's the message I want you to deliver to God's people. And here's the message that I want to deliver to you tonight. Remember." God says to Moses, "Remember the way that I have rescued you. Remember the things that I have done for you." For us, we need to remember how God has worked in our lives. We need to be stopping and considering those wonders, those ways that God has worked throughout our entire life, how we've seen him be faithful to us, especially in those times where we're struggling or going through difficulty or finding ourselves in this rut of sin, knowing that God is faithful and true to us. And he says, "You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Listen to verse 5. "Now," so before it was remember, "remember what I've done for you. Remember what you've seen." Verse 5. "Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites." So the message is really pretty simple that he wants to give to the people of God. It's, "Remember what I've done for you, now obey. Remember how I provided for you, now follow my will, follow my commands. Follow what it is that I'm asking you to do. Remember how I've rescued you, how I've freed you, how I rescued you from bondage and slavery. Now, obey my commandments and live for me." And he says, "If you do this, you will be my treasured possession. You will be my people." One more story. Hope it's okay. So, at our last church that we were at, sometimes we'd be up at the building in the Sunday afternoon. That's when our elders would like to meet, and so sometimes I'd go up there for elders' meetings, and occasionally my wife and my son would come up to the building, and they'd kind of walk around the building, and they'd pretty much been everywhere in our church building. Well, this one time, my son was probably a year and a half to 2 years, something like that. He was in that fun age where they're like learning new words, and so every new word was really exciting. And they're walking around the building, and he's kind of singing and dancing and having fun and playing. And I guess there's this one room they maybe had never been in before in the preschool area. And so they opened the door. And in this room, there was this like really big toy. I think it was like a big kitchen play set. And it was huge. It was massive. And they walk into this room, and he's singing, he's dancing, he's playing. And as they walk in, he says this word that we're pretty sure he had never said. He says it for the very first time. And to me, this word that he says was just this authentic, genuine, natural response to something that he thought was amazing. So they walk into the room, and he stops, and he freezes, and he says, "Whoa." It's the first time he'd ever said that word as far as we know. And I think it was neat that it was just a natural thing that came out of him. He saw this thing that was amazing. He saw this thing that he thought was really cool and wonderful and great. And his response, his natural, genuine, authentic response to something that stopped him in his tracks was, "Whoa." Flip over to another verse with me for a second. It's our last verse together. Romans chapter 5. Probably one of my favorite verses, one of the most important verses, a couple of verses in Scripture. Romans chapter 5, verse 6 through 8. "You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man someone might possibly dare to die." Listen to this, verse 8. "But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Whoa. Whoa. That should be our response to that. Our natural, genuine, authentic response to something that stops us in our tracks. Like knowing that while we were sinners, Christ died for us. I think, and my challenge for us tonight, for me, for all of us, is for us to make time to remember the ways that God has worked in our lives. To remember how, man, God has sent his son to die for me, and I did not deserve it. What I deserved was death. But it can be great when you get something that you don't deserve. Instead, we receive life. Instead, we can receive the opportunity to live with him in heaven forever. We need to remember the way that God has worked throughout our lives. And then now, like he says in chapter 19, now we need to obey him. Remember how he's worked in our lives. Now we need to obey him. So our challenge tonight is stop and consider God's wonders. Reflect on that. Spend some time thinking about all the ways that God has been working in your lives. And hopefully in doing so, that can change the way that we live. That can change our perspective. That can change times where we might have gotten upset. Now we're going to trust in God. That's, I think, what can come from stopping and considering the wonders of God.